What's up? This is Movies On Up. Fly up to Venezuela. I am Dave, joined by my co-host, Mr. Ryan.
Co-pilot for today.
Yeah, he is Ryan. I am Dave. We are Movies On Up. Our tagline for this week, fly up to Venezuela. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, we will lift our own famous Movies On Up prize package up to you, and it'll be your own to cherish forever and ever and ever until you die alone. this week, the end of the year is coming up. It's coming up with award season. We got Golden Globe noms already. Oscar noms are somewhere around here. I don't know, probably sometime next month. When you're talking movies, I think the main four that people think about are the SAG Awards, because that's peers on peers, Golden Globes, Oscars, and the Uppies. So this is, surprisingly, apparently we talked about it last year, that we had been doing it for so long, but I just realized this year that we've been doing these since 2012. So this is our seventh annual Uppie Awards, which was a big surprise to me. But apparently, according to Ryan, we had the same conversation last year, and we were shocked that we had been doing it for 6 years. So I'm excited to next year realize that we've been doing the Uppies for 8 years. It's a fun time for us. This episode, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. I tried not to be as negative this year. Like, there's mostly positive categories, but it gives us a chance
for a show that's not very negative. You know, we don't.
Yeah, I mean, there's some snark in there, but we've been more negative in past years. I tried to cut out some of that stuff because we love movies. I'd rather talk about movies I love than movies I hate. But then occasionally we'll do a Chronicle episode. It's just an opportunity to talk about movies and trends that we've seen this year, movies that maybe won't come up in our favorite 2019, or performances that won't show up in our favorite Vanessa Kirby episode or anything. So it's just a good opportunity for us to kind of go through the year and put our spin on it. So we're going to kick off the seventh annual Uppie Awards with a brand new category for this year. I'll be presenting
a couple of these are brand new.
There's a few, yeah. Ryan's wearing a nice gown, so he'll be presenting a lot of the awards, including this first one. The first Uppie of 2019 is the Keanuist Keanu. The nominees are John Wick 3, Always Be My Maybe, Toy Story 4, Replicas, or the SpongeBob movie trailer. Ryan, the winner for Keanuist Keanu.
I mean, if we were doing just based on the numbers, I think you kind of have to go Replicas, because what's more Keanu-y than one Keanu? Multiple Keanos. But I'm going to give it to what 6 months ago would have been considered kind of a massive spoiler. His role in Always Be My Maybe kind of comes out of nowhere. And Keanu's good. I'm not trying to say that I don't enjoy him, but he might be best used in small doses. We get him a little bit in Always Be My Maybe, enough to satisfy you.
More than I expected,
right.
Honestly.
He's got a decent role in Toy Story 4, which is fun. He's got that cyberpunk game that he's going to be a part of next year that people seem really hype about. So I think this is kind of a new phase for Keanu, where he's famous enough that he can show up for a small role and elevate it. So maybe the genesis of that was Always Be My Maybe.
I thought he was perfect. Like, he's playing Keanu Reeves in that movie. So that, I think, is dead on, is the most Keanuist Keanu. But I wish he wasn't in the trailer. He shows up in the trailer and it's a great moment. It's funny. But how great would it be to be watching that movie for the first time and not know that Keanu Reeves shows up at that restaurant?
So if you haven't rested your cursor on Always Be My Maybe on Netflix in the past 9 months, I'm sorry that we had to be the ones to blow that for you.
But watch it. It's a good movie.
From a kick-ass dude to the kick-assiest lady, and that will be our next category.
It's one of my favorite categories every year.
It's fun. This year, Dave's already mentioned one of the nominees. Interestingly enough, she gets nominated from a movie that's title is two dude characters. Suck on that, Hobbs and Shaw. Vanessa Kirby is your first nomination from the Fast and Furious spinoff, Hobbs and Shaw. Brie Larson from Captain Marvel, Mackenzie Davis, Terminator, Ella Balinski, Charlie's Angels, and Cynthia Erivo for Harriet. And the winner is.
This is tough because I like them all.
I know
this
you do.
This is one of those you could put any of them.
It's
like,
an honor just to be nominated.
I like Cynthia Erivo because that's not the kind of role that we normally nominate for this. But
like a historical?
Yeah. Role? Like she's a historical badass, Harriet Tubman. She kicked ass. But I got to go. When you have a former not quite Anna Kendrick winner nominated, it's hard not to give it to her. So I have to go with Brie Larson from Captain Marvel.
Going into Endgame, my biggest fear in the world was the solution to the Thanos problem was literally just Captain Marvel. So the past 10 years of this, well, if they'd have just had Captain Marvel, all this would have been solved. So I think she is the most kick-assiest just because of the character. I mean, if they were all in a fight...
Wiping them all out.
Yeah, I do feel that that's...
Sorry, Harriet Tubman.
Close second.
This is one of our
snarky, reoccurring categories.
Yeah, this is least surprising bomb. This is a movie that bombed, but if you pay attention, you knew it was coming, and it shouldn't surprise anybody. And the nominees are the Playmobil movie, which went on record as one of the... large, it averaged like $1,000 a screen. It was one of the largest bombs in history. Ugly Dolls, Serenity, not the good one, directed by Joss Whedon. Replicas, getting a second mention, like it's replicating. And the final of the X-Men Fox saga, X-Men Dark Phoenix. And Ryan, the winner of the least surprising bomb.
This one's tough. I feel like they were all not very surprising that they all bombed. So it's which one are you least surprised by? So I'm going to take out the level to which they bombed because they were all going to do that. I did think that there was a possibility that Playmobil could make some money just because it was a kids movie and maybe kids would be tired of Anna and Elsa and want to watch a different kids movie. I'm not shocked it bombed. I am shocked that it was the biggest bomb of all time. Or one of the biggest. And if that had been the category, it would win. But the least surprising bomb for me on here is Dark Phoenix. The way that franchise has been trending, the other X-Men movie that they had in the can that they won't even release.
This got my vote as well. It was a unanimous winner. Well,
they've all been unanimous thus far. That's a shocker.
Because how I look at, what I look at least surprising bomb is contradict that with what the studio thinks. If the public realizes it's going to be a bomb, Replicas was thrown away in January. Serenity was an early year
January,
release.
Yeah, January, February, too. There.
Ugly Dolls and Playmobil both came without much fanfare and much promotion or anything. But Dark Phoenix was hyped as a blockbuster. Like, they still tried to pretend this was an event movie.
Which, from a studio standpoint, the most surprising bomb. But from us,
yes,
no.
Least.
Saw that coming.
Yeah.
Because we don't stick negative for too long, we have our next category, which is the bombiest bomb. So these are movies that did not do well. Maybe you didn't see them because nobody did, but perhaps you should go back and give at least one of the following movies a chance. The nominees are Charlie's Angels, Hellboy, The Boy Who Would Be King, Dr. Sleep, and another movie featuring multiple versions of the same character, Gemini Man.
This one, I think the only one I think was a surprise that it was a bomb.
That didn't make money.
Was Dr. Sleep.
Yes.
Because I think that was a quality movie. The rest are kind of tentpoles or whatever that I could see being hit or miss. And Gemini Man, the budget and hype was just so much. This is tough because I legit love all of these movies. And I really, really love Charlie's Angels and Hellboy. But I have to go... One of our big viewers, his favorite movie of the year was Hellboy. So in honor of Zane, our Korean audience, well, he's American, our audience in Korea.
He represents our audience in Korea.
I have to give the bombiest bomb to Hellboy, which I just watched again the other day because I did not like the first 40 minutes of Hellboy. After that 40 minutes, I love the rest of Hellboy. Whereas Charlie's Angels, I liked it the whole way through. The others as well, but Hellboy, in honor of Zane... The bombiest bomb of the year is Hellboy. The next one, still kind of trying to put a spin on negativity. It's one of my favorites because I like a lot of movies that people consider bad, as I think I just gushed about five of them. The best bad-reviewed movie. These are among the worst reviewed movies of the year, not necessarily box office or anything, that I think are fun and kind of worth a watch. So the nominees are Stuber, Shaft, Yesterday, and Miss Bala.
There are multiple reasons to give a movie a bad review. The acting sucks, cinematography's stupid, there's giant plot holes, whatever. Some of it's subjective, some of it's not. But if you have some movies that do objectively have some things wrong with it, one of the things you can do to make up for that is make it enjoyable. And to a certain extent, I think all of these movies were. For me, it's much easier. It's just window dressing, but it's much easier to make a movie enjoyable when it's really funny. So it's Stuber for me, the best bad reviewed movie. Is it a bad movie? No. Is it a good movie? Absolutely not. Is it funny? Yes.
I loved it. I have this thing for Kumail Nanjiani. I always have.
Just recently, we saw him with his shirt off.
Yeah, go back a week ago at this point, his shirt came off. I liked Stuber. I thought it was a great buddy movie that dealt with stuff that a lot of buddy movies didn't. It dealt with toxic masculinity and stuff. I thought it was really good. I always think Kumail's funny, but I thought Batista was really, really, really good in it. So I would agree. Stuber would have been my vote, too.
So from bad movies to bad guys, or bad ladies, because we are equal opportunity here, the villainiest villain of 2019. The nominees are Bill Skarsgård from It, Chapter 2. The Runtime from It, Chapter 2. Chiwetel Ejiofor from The Lion King. Rebecca Ferguson from The Kid Who Would Be King. And Mark Strong from Shazam. The winner is.
This is tough. I'm a Chiwetel fan.
I know you like Chewie.
I like him, especially in a villain role. And I thought he was really, really good. But I'm going to go with the surprising, I would say the upset victory, Mark Strong from Shazam, who he's kind of pigeonholed into this role in movies where he's just this bad guy. But he came into essentially what's a kid's superhero movie. It was like a horror bad guy. It made the movie a lot darker at moments than I expected it to be. So I think from a villain standpoint, Skarsgård's great. The runtime was bad.
That sucked.
Chiwetel's awesome. Rebecca Ferguson was great as Morgana or whatever the name is.
And yeah,
it's either The Kid Would Be King or Boy Who Would Be King. I don't know exactly, but I think
you get the point.
Yeah.
It's the little kid that
he's going to be king.
He gets the sword.
But Mark Strong from Shazam in the upset. I think he's like when Mark Rylance won for
The Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
They're both English, I think, right?
I think all actors are. Some could say America was a rebooted sequel to the United Kingdom. That's a Ryan segue for me.
No, it isn't.
We decided to reboot England and we became the United States of America. So this one, it's a category that I feel like the nominees get fewer and fewer each year, but
thankfully,
we still have a handful of nominees each year. It is the rebootiest sequel, otherwise known as legacy sequel, kind of way to try to reinvigorate a franchise while mixing it up completely. The nominees are Terminator, Dark Fate, Charlie's Angels, Shaft, and Men in Black International.
Can I say that we had the kick-assiest lady? There are really no losers in that category because they're all pretty kick-ass. This is a category, I think, where there are no winners. I think all these movies are rough. I will give it to Charlie's Angels based solely on the idea. I like the fact that they were essentially rebooting and doing the legacy sequel at the same time, which I think is a difficult thing to pull off, judged by Men in Black International. That is absolutely not how you do it. Terminator Dark Fate, that's a rough attempt at it.
When you're trying to ignore four other movies.
Exactly. So just for continuity's sake, for this is a blueprint to do it, I'm not going to say that I love Charlie's Angels, but I think that's the way you do it. So they're going to win for that.
I liked it. It was its own movie. It was a completely different movie.
Right.
But it made itself canon with the TV show and the Barrymore movies of the early aughts.
The McGees.
Yeah, and there's one of my favorite bits in any movie ever. It was the Burt Lancaster bit that just came out of nowhere. I still laugh about it, and I've seen it I don't know how long ago.
So I think Dave's intention with the last category was to talk good about some sequels that have come out this year. Now, again, legacy sequels, it's kind of a subgenre of sequels. This is unequivocally a time to throw dirt on some horrible remakes, and that is the category, the
horrible,
because they're all horror as well, but they all sucked. And the nominees are Jacob's Ladder, The Grudge, and Pet Sematary.
Grant, The Grudge doesn't come out till next week, but I felt it was...
And Child's Play? Yeah. Not...
Oh, yeah, Child's Play. That's another nominee.
Do we want to switch that out? Switch The Grudge out for Child's Play?
No, there's just four nominees. So Child's Play, and the biggest upset.
Late entry, right in.
Late entry, right in vote. Child's Play wins for the horriblest remake. I think that's unfair. Jacob's Ladder was not worth watching. Pet Sematary was one of those that is, I wouldn't say horrible. It was just unnecessary. It was too similar. The ending was way different. It kind of didn't work for me. Child's Play was kind of watchable. If you're going to watch one of them, watch Child's Play. So I guess that gets the win for horriblest remake.
Fair enough.
Next is another one of my favorite categories. I look forward to this every year. I jot down through the year nominees. And that's why there's always like 8 to 10, because I can't narrow it down. Good luck picking this one. Our next category is Most Adorable Duo. The nominees are Randall Park and Ali Wong from Always Be My Maybe, Chris Evans and his sweater from Knives Out, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Linda Hamilton in Terminator Dark Fate, The Rock, Jason Statham in Hobbs and Shaw, Samuel L. Jackson and Goose in Captain Marvel, Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner in The Lion King, and John Boyega and Oscar Isaac in Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker. And the winner for Most Adorable Duo is...
I mean, I feel like if you know anything about this show and you know that I'm picking it, I feel like the strong money is on The Rock and Statham, but in almost an equally large upset to our last category, the guy that won didn't even get nominated, I'm going to go with Samuel L. Jackson and Goose from Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel is a character that does not really have a lot of humor. So much so that Ben Mendelsohn, of all people, injected. Yes, absolutely. But I did enjoy the dynamic between Nick Fury and Goose. That provided me with a lot of enjoyment in a movie that I didn't find a great deal of enjoyment in. I'm down for that cat. Give me like a Disney Plus animated spinoff of just the cat. I'm into it.
Flurkin.
Yeah. In cat's clothing.
I thought this would be a Return of the King type scenario where after three nominations, I thought that Boyega and Oscar Isaac would finally win.
Well, they would, except the universe seems so hell-bent on not making them a cute couple, despite both of them wanting, and everybody else wanting it. All the Finn Poe shippers out there. Had a couple male-male groups for our cutest couple, but just to show that we are, again, not giving any disrespect to our ladies, here's our best final girl category. It's something we spent an awful lot of time on. In October, we did our favorite final girls. No, that's not accurate. We did the best final girls of all time, tried to divorce our feelings on the actual characters and actresses themselves. But those feelings are coming back in a big way for this category, because that's all what it's about. And your nominees are Lupita Nyong'o from Us, Jessica Roth from Happy Death Day to You, Samara Weaving from Ready or Not, and Dave's favorite, Kaya Scaldaro from Crawl. And the winner.
I think they're all winners. I love every one of these movies. But I love every
much
one of
like
these
the Highlander,
actresses.
There can be only one.
I loved Crawl. I loved Ready or Not. I liked Happy Death Day. And there was a sequel to it. But it's hard not to. The scariest thing is yourself.
You can't run from yourself.
Yeah. So I think it's got to go to Lupita Nyong'o from Us. She cracked our top 20, I think.
She did, actually.
Yeah. Barely.
I don't think Samara Weaving did. Movie we saw too late.
Yeah.
Tree was in our top, as was Red. And I can't remember what the real character's name was in that, but I remember Red. Yeah, you get no argument from me there.
I'm bad with that character names. Everybody in the movies are just the actress names.
Yeah, I remembered her alter ego, but I don't remember who the nice version, quote unquote, of Red was.
This next category, it's another one that I like. It's basically just what movies shouldn't have been that good that we really, really liked. And this is totally a me category.
And I get to pick it.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see where it goes. This is the Better Than It Should Have Been award for a movie that the premise or the idea doesn't really... could be called the Point Break Award, I guess, moving forward. It's The Night Before Christmas, Vanessa Hudgens on Netflix, Detective Pikachu, Cold Pursuit, and Between Two Ferns, the movie. The only reason it's on there is I had high expectations for it because I love everybody involved, but to take a four-minute web series and turn it into a movie, can you do that? And is it going to be good? So... Ryan, the winner of the Better Than It Should Have Been.
The question, is it good enough to win this award? The answer is no. If you think a thin premise is a four-minute comedy sketch, how about a thin premise being angry snowplow driver avenging somehow the drug-related death of his son? It's Cold Pursuit.
Starting a gang war.
Yeah. That movie is... So it is a remake of like a Norwegian?
Yeah,
or
I forget the
somewhere
one by one. I forget
Europe,
the name of it. Yeah,
yeah, that area. EU, Europe.
In
so
Order
like not
of Disappearance.
Britain.
Yeah, that's what it was called.
Yeah. If that movie is to work, it can really only have been done the way it was. It is darkly funny, and it stars Liam Neeson. Those two things have to work. They have to work in concert for this to be watchable.
Plus, I think Tom Bateman as the villain, he almost got a nom for villainy as villain. Ooh, but I didn't know if
people... tipping your hand.
I mean, I really like Cold Pursuit. I would have voted for Detective Pikachu because that is going to be pretty high on my list year-end movies probably. But Cold Pursuit will probably make an appearance too. I liked all of these movies.
You might say they were all marvelous. Our next category is for the most marvelous performance, and that is Marvel actors outside of the MCU. The nominees are Chris Evans from Knives Out, Scarlett Johansson from Marriage Story, Chadwick Boseman from 21 Bridges, Brie Larson from Between Two Ferns, colon, the movie, and Mark Ruffalo from Dark Waters. The winner is...
Brie Larson was one of many in Between Two Ferns. You had Paul Rudd, Benedict Cumberbatch. I really liked her interview. This one has to go to Chris Evans from Knives Out. I really liked him. I thought I could see that being a supporting actor, Dom. I don't think he's going to get it.
More so than Scarlett Johansson?
Oh, Scarlett's going to get nominated.
Okay, all right.
She's going to get nominated. I'll let the Oscar give her recognition.
Fair enough, okay.
Chris Evans, I don't think he'll get it, but I thought he was so good. And I mean, I love Knives Out. We'll talk about it more in a few weeks, I'm sure, but... You have Captain America playing the dickhead, like against type.
Spoiler alert.
You have Captain America playing the guy who I used to hate before he was the originator of the McAvoy turn. Chris Evans was the first McAvoy turn. So it's kind of one of the reasons why Brie Larson won the Kick-Assiest Lady. Like, she won one of our major awards already. So it's hard when they're nominated not to recognize them. So yeah, Chris Evans from Knives Out.
You know, Chris Evans went to a bitchin' high school party, and that was not another teen movie.
Yeah, none as bitchin' as Peter Facinelli did. Can't hardly wait. But the nominees for the most bitchingest high school party of the year are Booksmart, Good Boys, and Maw.
I hate to get into a semantical argument.
And I knew this was going to come up.
Okay.
Good Boys is a middle school party.
Yes.
But if you want to tell me getting high with Molly Gordon upstairs doesn't sound bitchin', we got nothing in common.
I'm not arguing the bitchingest part of the party. I'm just arguing it's the high school nature. If it was just most bitchingest party of the year.
Molly Gordon and her friend are high schoolers.
Do
you want to be downstairs at the lame middle school party? Or do you want to be upstairs with the two high school girls doing cool stuff?
I guess if doing cool stuff, playing VR and listening to your buddy sing. Booksmart. That's the party. Arguably.
Multiple parties.
Exactly. Yeah. Which one? Are we talking about the boat party?
the murder party?
Billy Lord?
The murder mystery.
Yeah. I'm assuming it's the party they're trying to get
to.
The
destination. The
entire night. Yeah. Which was a pretty...
Although that wasn't the funnest one.
No, I don't think it was the funnest one. It was just their journey together.
Them walking out at the And after the big cutaway, and them like walking out of the house with the straight arms and legs, I still just laugh every time I think of it. That's probably the hardest I've laughed at a movie this year, other than Charlie's Angels.
We may talk more about Booksmart coming up.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. There are at least three nominees that'll probably come up their movies in our best of the year. This is another really solid category. And it is called Cops. Someone's stealing all the scenes. Your nominees for that are Wesley Snipes from Dolomite Is My Name, Billy Magnuson from Velvet Buzzsaw, Noah Segan from Knives Out, and Caitlin Dever from the aforementioned Booksmart. And the winner is...
This is tough. Because Caitlin Dever was a lead.
Yes.
Like, it's hard to be considered like a scene stealer when you're the lead.
Right.
But her line delivery, like, there's not a single line that she delivers that's not hilarious. Yeah, her co-star got nominated for the Golden Globe. I feel like they both should have been, because not to take away from Beanie Feldstein, I just think Caitlin Dever, her delivery on so many of those lines is just flawless. Noah Segan is in an all-star cast and still just jumps out because he's hilarious. Billy Magnuson is in a movie where everybody is stealing every scene. Like, it's just a good director saying everybody, like, oh, just chew scenery. Go nuts. And that's all Billy Magnuson's career. But this movie will come up again in a couple of weeks at our favorites of 2019. But it's winning its only nomination of the night. It has to go to Wesley Snipes from Dolomite Is My Name. Such a great performance. In a movie filled with great performances, in Eddie Murphy being top-notch, and everybody is really, really good. But Wesley Snipes just shows up as not you would expect Wesley Snipes to be. It is hilarious. It is great. It just, every scene is his that he's in.
Yeah, I agree. And mostly because, again, I think Caitlin Dever was great. She's had a really good year this year.
Yeah, she was close for one of our coming up years if it had been more movies, because she did get a Golden Globe nom for Undeniable.
Yeah.
She's a star. She's one of those that I think she's going to be big time soon, because she was so funny in Booksmart. Like, her comedic timing and delivery was just so dry and just so perfect. And then you go to Undeniable on Netflix, where she's just
laugh a minute.
Not that she's this trauma victim that's so real, and you feel for her the whole time. She's a star, and you're gonna look back on 2019 as like, oh,
that's where she came from.
Yeah. Our next category, another new one for this year. Sometimes the movies come out, and it's like, oh, there's a theme. They need their own category. So this year, brand new Uppy for Most Bridges, and the nominees are 21 Bridges. Ryan, the winner of Most Bridges.
I was kind of hoping that you were just going to repeat that 20 more times. Yeah, it's 21 Bridges. I think this category, and we talked about it, the spoiler before the show, if only we could have found a movie with a couple members of the acting Bridges
family.
A Bridge
to Terabithia.
Yeah, anything.
It's a single bridge.
But yeah, we couldn't even do that. Bridge of Spies, the aforementioned Mark Rylance movie. No, but it's just 21 Bridges, so... the fuck, unless there's a sequel, 22 Bridges.
Well, the original script, I believe, was titled 15 Bridges, because nobody took the time to count
how many bridges in and out. Yeah.
So they had to, after production, like, they had to dub some lines talking about the bridges because they had the wrong number.
Dub 21 over 15.
Yeah.
We've had a couple party and high school categories, so why not stick with that and go with our next award? And it is for high school students pissing off Octavia Spencer, Film of the Year. And it's a two-horse race between Ma and Luce, the winner.
Ma was the wide release that made decent money. If there was a category for how the hell did you get that cast, it's Ma. Because there's some really good people in this movie. Oscar winner Allison Janney shows up, and it's an awful movie. Luce is the winner. And Luce is a phenomenal movie. If you have not seen Luce and you're trying to put together your year-end lists, check out Luce starring Octavia Spencer getting pissed off at a high school kid. It's phenomenal. Speaking of phenomenal, we're on to our last nominee category. The rest are just Lifetime Achievement Awards.
Yearly Achievement Awards.
Yeah, Yearly Achievement.
In some instances.
Yeah. So this one, it's, you know, it's
the
big
one.
It's
what you've been waiting for.
It's what you've watched all those speeches for that you're up until 11:40 at night to watch. It is the best picture. And every year, there's a theme.
Every year, it's insanely predictable.
Yeah. The best picture nominees of this year, Noelle, direct to Disney Plus movie starring Anna Kendrick. The Day Shall Come, Trolls 2 trailer. And the Lay's holiday commercial featuring Anna Kendrick singing These Are a Few of My Favorite Things. And the winner for Best Picture, 2019.
I'd like to just say it was the Lay's commercial. Because really,
it's probably the best of
like
those
when
four.
I think of, and I do a lot, when I think of Anna Kendrick, that is what comes to mind. Just being charming and singing and probably actually in real life liking Doritos and Cheetos as well. But if you've listened to this throughout the course of the year, you know that we're always going to give an Anna Kendrick movie an award. Good, bad, or indifferent. They're usually good to indifferent. But the day shall come. Because it's actually,
a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. She's in it. She has a good part in it. And we always give one of her movies an award anyway. So
and
it's just going to be this one.
Noelle was awful.
Yeah.
Noelle was dreadful to get through.
Yeah, I didn't. That should tell you something right there. Our second annual Hell of a Year award.
This one transitioned. Last year there were nominees. This year it's just a winner.
It's a relatively new award. Obviously, it's only our second annual one. This is a spinoff of a different award that comes later in the night. And we tried to give it to two people last year, but then I think we just rephrased things so that you could have a scenario where one quarterback could win the MVP and the other could
offensive
win.
Player.
Right. Yeah, just to keep everybody satisfied. So that'll give us our second annual Hell of a Year award. And that goes to Awkwafina. Did have a hell of a year. The Farewell, which she got a ton of critical praise for.
Hopefully gets an Oscar nom, which is well-deserved. She's phenomenal.
Probably no Oscar for Jumanji.
But money.
Right, money. Neither for Between Two Ferns, but she's a comedian. That's a good use for her. Angry Birds 2, and then she was the voice of one of the Lady Skeksis in the Dark Crystal series. It's kind of hard to not hear her. Now that I think about that character, because she was really good.
She's really good at everything. Yeah. The first thing I saw Awkwafina in, I loved her in. And she's blown up quickly. The first thing I saw her in was 17 or so. So, I mean, it's only been a couple of years, and she's exploded.
Yeah, like, I want to say, like, I remember her in that the Oceans movie.
But before that, she was in a Netflix movie with, I forget the movie. She was really good in that. I really like Awkwafina. She's one of those that she makes things better. She shows up in something, it's instantly better. This year, we have a first annual. We mentioned Zane. Our Korean audience. He gave us Hellboy as the winner for Da Bombiest Bomb. This year, he gets his own award, the first annual Zane's This Movie is Better Than This is Spinal Tap award winner. And the nominee, even though this is the first annual one, there have been nominees from 2012 to now, and it is the same nominees. No winner. Try again next year.
I think that's an inside one that I'm not even inside enough to know.
What movie this year is better than Spinal Tap?
Does it have to be like a musical mockumentary? Or
yes.
Okay, that's going to require some more thought. But what doesn't require a great deal of thought is our fifth annual Almost Anna Kendrick Award. Now that goes to the actress that we like a ton, versatile, probably charming as shit. I think all of those things apply to our winner this year, who honestly had a hell of a year. This is the MVP award. This is what you want to win. Awkwafina kind of got the silver medal. Florence Pugh gets the gold medal. She obviously Little Women at the tail end of the year, Fighting with My Family at the beginning of the year, and
which
then
we
Midsummer.
Both really liked, yeah.
Yep,
which we both really liked.
Yes, exactly. So a lot of really good stuff. A lot of varied stuff there. Really kind of not being pigeonholed anywhere. Good year for Florence Pugh, and then she's got Black Widow coming next year.
Yeah, who won last year?
Might have been Florence Pugh for all I know.
Oh, Zoe Deutsch.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah, she won last year.
Yeah, she did. She is like if you poured water on Anna Kendrick, you'd probably get Zoe Deutsch.
Yeah.
It's a Gremlins reference.
The next one.
Not because I think she looks like a wet Anna Kendrick.
Sorry, I just daydreamed for a minute. Our next one.
About Gremlins.
Combined, yes. Actually, it was all of it. And Noah Centineo, which this is basically the Noah Centineo Award, but it's the second annual Male Anna Kendrick Award. The Almost Anna Kendrick Award. It's somebody that we like and maybe haven't appreciated, or somebody who's just kind of burst onto the scene. So the same kind of rules apply to the Male Anna Kendrick Award. Last year it was Noah Centineo, who came out of nowhere to steal our hearts. This year it's somebody who's owned our hearts for a long time, but we got some good content from him this year. It is Adam Brody from Ready or Not. Some of the best Adam Brody content in years. Also showed up, it's his charming self in Shazam. I really like this year for Adam Brody because I am all for more Adam Brody all the time and everything.
All right, that's it for the positive stuff for a little bit. We got to drag things down to the bottom. We are bottoming out with our 7th annual Worthless Worthington Award. That award named for Sam Worthington, who, as Dave says, has a range of exactly 2 things, speaking and non-speaking. It is given every year to somebody that is leading movies despite not having any ability to lead a movie.
And here's the thing, is this one, to preface it, it's not necessarily somebody who's a bat. Like, it could be somebody who's good in, like, a supporting role.
Yes.
But it's somebody who studios have tried to make, like, a name above the title movie guy or just leading movies that we don't feel like that's going to happen anymore. Some of the past ones, Jamie Dornan.
Yes.
You know, once 50 Shades was over, Jack Huston. I don't even remember. Like, I was looking through the past winners. Like, I don't even remember that dude. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's people that have led movies that we don't think will be leading movies anymore. But they may still be okay in supporting roles.
Or they may actually be good actors and go on to win our next award, as has happened. Although I do not see that in the future for the 2019 Worthless Worthington winner, Ed Skrein, who led Midway this year, which is the Roland Emmerichiest movie that you could possibly imagine. He is playing a fighter pilot or a bomber pilot, and he just sucks. You don't go to see that movie because you're looking to see good performances. You just want to see naval battles, which you get a lot of. Roland Emmerich gives you exactly what you'd expect, and the actors that are in this movie, for the most part, give you exactly what you'd expect. That includes not much from Ed Skrein. He was in Alita. He was one of the villains. He was fun in that movie, but you kind of got to remember that that was Ed Skrein because that's how big his part is, and that's a fine part for Ed Skrein.
I mean, he was the bad guy in the first Deadpool.
Yes, he was.
The first one. He was fine, but you know,
that character kind of sucked movie, too. Yeah. So yeah, Ed Skrein, thanks for coming.
The next one, we're back to the positive. We have a term that we've done here, I guess I personally coined, is the McAvoy turn. He wasn't the first one to do it. In fact, I think he was the third after Chris Evans and Channing Tatum were the first two to make it. But an actor that I really disliked, like I really hated James McAvoy. I couldn't watch Wanted because he looked awful and it all. I hated James McAvoy as an actor. And then in 1 year he did Filth, Trance, and Welcome to the Punch.
Filth, the only 2-time winner of Best Picture in our, not in the uppies, in our year-end list. Yeah, won 2 years in a row.
And so after that, it's like, oh, I love James McAvoy. I fell in love with James McAvoy, and I've loved watching him and everything since. So it's an actor that maybe, it's different from year to year, because it's maybe somebody that I used to hate or not take seriously that has turned it around. Like Taylor Kitsch was always awful and stuff, but then that was that year he had Lone Survivor or something, and I think something else, which he was really good in. So this year, it's not somebody that was bad per se, but somebody that I didn't really, they weren't really on my radar.
Didn't have a ton of respect for.
Yeah, and it's odd because one of them was in one of my favorite movies ever, but the 7th annual James McAvoy Award is the first time we have a co-winner, and it's the cast of Hustlers. J-Lo starred in Out of Sight, which is one of my favorite movies ever, but I never really considered her like
an actress
or a movie star that I cared about. She's had a fine career,
yeah,
but not in stuff that I cared about. Hustlers, I want her to get an Oscar nom. And if she makes another movie in the next couple of years, yes, I want to see this J-Lo. Keke Palmer, I knew existed, but didn't really have any opinion on. She was so good in this, and even a lot of her press leading up to this made me realize, like, I love Keke Palmer. And so big on her on social media now. She's on some show on Epics that I'm going to watch. And Constance Wu, who I just didn't really have an opinion on. I, you know, she's on that ABC sitcom. but she was really good in this. And it's like, okay, I want to watch her in movies. So it's kind of a trio of winners is the cast of Hustlers, from Jennifer Lopez, Kiki Palmer, and Constance Wu. This movie made me want to pay attention to what they do moving forward. So I feel it qualifies, and I feel that's a good James McAvoy Award winner.
I like being inclusive, doing some different things. Who wants to just give an award to one person when we can make a bunch of people share it? We are going to finish the night the same way we always do, is by giving one more award that just one person wins. I actually am not sure that there's a way to split this one. I do feel like
if Replicas becomes real.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Replicas or the water theory becomes real. It is our 7th annual Anna Kendrick Lifetime Achievement Award. This one I don't feel like is inside as the Zane Award. We do this every year. If you've listened to this show for a long time, because I don't think we do it as much now, but you may be aware that we do enjoy the work of Anna Kendrick. So every year we just take way longer than we take for any other award to just appreciate her as an actress. I don't believe there's an actor that has more uppies than Anna Kendrick. She's got 7 of these fucking things, and she's got 7 best pictures. So that's 14. We've only been doing this for 7 years. I don't think anybody else is averaging 2 per year. She's a big fan of us, and we are of her. It's a mutual
admiration.
It used
to be every Thanksgiving or every Valentine's Day we would do an Anna Kendrick-themed episode.
Yeah, I don't think that lasted very long. That might have been like 2 or 3 years. I guess we could bring it back. That's one less episode we got a plan for next year we'll do. Maybe one of the movies that were nominated for Best Picture this year. Maybe that's it.
I'd rather not.
Fair enough. Yeah, because that might be a little
weird. I don't
want to
see Trolls 2.
We're going to see it anyway. That's it for the night. I do feel like that Lifetime Achievement Award and even Best Picture, those should have been pretty obvious. So if you stuck around all night just to hear those, I appreciate it. Although you can fast forward and rewind this as much as you'd like. You can't do that on the live Oscars broadcast. That'll bring us to the end of the 7th annual Uppie Awards. These last couple episodes of the year are always one that we look forward to. They're fun for us. It's a little bit of a break from our stupid list or whatever. Next week, it's a stupid movie episode. It is the last stupid Star Wars movie that's going to be out for a while. Rise of Skywalker. We've done a Star Wars movie, I want to say, certainly since the Disney movies have come out.
I think we've done every Star Wars movie except Rogue One.
Which is a shame, because that's my favorite.
It's one of my favorites, yeah. So maybe we'll fix that next year.
Yeah. The episodes to end out the year and to start the new year, Uppies, whatever our Star Wars discussion is, favorites of the year. And then we're going to do favorites of the decade, as 2019 will wrap up the first decade in the 2000s. That'll be fascinating. I have absolutely no idea what that list is going to look like, but I'm going to look forward to putting that together. We're actually going to do 30. So we're going to have a two-parter, 15 movies a piece in each part. It's going to be a co-list, so Dave and I are going to put that together sometime at the very end of this year. But we do hope that, again, thanks for sticking around all year. Looking forward to, starting the 8th calendar year of this shit, nearing 500 episodes. That's going to kind of coincide with our
8th anniversary.
Yeah, our 8th anniversary special should be right around the 500 episode mark. I don't imagine anybody's listened to all 500 of them. I know Dave hasn't, and if he hasn't, why should you?
Listen to maybe 5.
Shit, I haven't listened to all 500 of them, I don't believe. Thank you guys for listening. If you didn't listen, we would probably still do it anyway, but it makes us feel less silly sitting around in a kitchen, because we know at least Zane, halfway across the world in Korea, is digging it. So thank you. And we'll be back next week, hopefully, talking about how much I loved The Rise of Skywalker. I want to love it so bad. I want it to just bring everything together for me. And
we will have known yesterday. We both saw it last night.
Yes. As we record this, we are less than 24 hours away from seeing it. Couldn't come soon enough for us. So hopefully next week can't come soon enough for you. But until then,
keep it up.